It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley are here. So is this the new Surface Go? Mary Jo and I will have our review of Microsoft's tiniest, cutest little Surface. We'll also talk about the new version of Redstone 5. And Skype's back, baby. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Theron and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 581, recorded Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. Not with my gorilla hands. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at RocketMortgage.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the cute little show that fits in the palm of your hand. Here they are, stars of our show from beautiful New York, New York, Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog, and from Stockholm, Switzerland, Mr. Paul. Mr. Paul.
Close enough.
Sweden, Switzerland, what's the difference?
I saw a sign today that says Stockholm, the capital of Scandinavia. I was like, you know, I'm going to think there are a couple other cities that might have a problem.
I don't know how the Norwegians and the Finns might feel about that.
Possibly the Danish, too.
Finland isn't really... Finland is its own thing because they don't speak Scandinavian.
Right. They also don't use Swedobucks, as I call them.
Swedobucks. It's not a Euro thing there?
No, it's not. It's like it's like Venezuelan currency. You have to do like this incredible math every time you buy anything. Why does a donut cost $3,000? Oh, because we're in Sweden.
That's why Japan is so easy, because a yen is basically a penny.
Right.
And the euro's close enough to a buck that, you know, mocks nicks.
Yep.
But how many kroners are there per?
It's actually about 100 to 1. So no, it's about so 10, 10.
10 to 1. Yeah, so it's a dime.
But it's still, you get a lunch bill, and it's 550 something, whatever, kroner.
It's confusing.
And you're like,
die.
Oh, wait.
Whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
You're not getting a good tip, sorry.
Whoa. You're going to get a 50 cent tip.
Yeah, actually, that's a pretty good tip here.
Do they tip in Sweden?
Just like 10% at restaurants. Yeah.
I loved Japan. They just prevent tipping. They'll actually chase you and say, "Oh, sir, you left some money on the table."
Yeah.
Literally.
They just do not let you. Yeah.
I like it.
I know.
Yep.
That just makes sense. Pay a living wage and then, charge me a little more.
Let me tell you, seriously, this place has it figured out. And the thing that is most amazing about this, I assumed even coming from Emmaus, which I have described as the whitest place in America, that this would be the whitest place in the world. This is the most diverse place I have ever visited in my entire life.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Yeah, President Trump told us that. they got real problems with all that immigration.
No, they have no problems.
They've got no problems.
Other than the 16 hours of darkness in the winter. But other than that, like as far as integrating people into society, this place is amazing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't remember that from being there. But
yeah. No, it's,
I also
it's
was
amazing.
There in the winter, so.
Right. No, it's.
What were you doing in the winter in Sweden?
Oh man, I was speaking at a conference in November in Stockholm a few years ago.
Holy.
And it was dark, like Paul said, like most of the day, 3 hours or so, not dark.
Yeah. So now it's late most of the day. Actually, Leo, you missed this last week. I didn't have lights on in here, and it got progressively darker as the show went on.
I've seen that happen with you, Paul. You get progressively so darker even if you're not in Sweden.
That's true. I do. That's true. There's a couple of drinks. I get really dark. But I turned on some lights, so maybe this time we'll be okay.
Okay. It looks good. You got Life magazine behind you. Is that a special issue of Life magazine?
Actually, that's a – I can't remember the wrong way. That's a poster. I believe that is Ernest Hemingway. It's the Ernest Hemingway book.
Neat. Cover. That's neat.
There's like an Obama poster over there.
Wow.
And then what I think is Chiquita Banana. Is that a thing?
Yeah, Chiquita Banana. Like, and I come to say bananas like to ripen in a special way. When they're flicked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas are the very, very best for you. Sorry.
I remember that.
Do you? You can eat them in a salad. Da, 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 da. You can eat them in a pie. Da, 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 da. Any way you really want to eat them, you really cannot beat them. Bananas have the flavor of the tropical equator. So never put bananas in the refrigerator. Oh, no, no, no. Oh,
wow. Yep.
It's so, just like butter.
Butter.
Unless it's...
I don't refrigerate my butter either, unless it's 100 degrees.
Yeah, yes. You would hear this week. Ooh.
Yeah. It just, then you get a puddle.
Yeah.
So, okay, enough, you know, chit-chat.
Enough derailing.
Enough derailing. I'm holding in my hand. Now, I noticed, Mary Jo, you got the blue suede version of the Surface Go.
Alcantara. I went all out this time.
I got the Cordoba.
Did you guys both get the upper level version, or Mary Jo, did you get the lower end version?
No, I got the upper end version also.
Yeah. I am really curious to see
somebody
comparison of the
anybody.
Two. You know?
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody review the lower end one, I don't think.
It's really that predictably irrational thing that you, I don't know, there's a name for it.
That's right. Yep.
Where you
you offer one that's a piece of junk, but then for $50, $100 more, you have the real one.
And everybody goes, what a, you know, oh, I love the low price, but, you know, I can afford a little more to get the little bit better.
Yep.
And nobody buys that low price one. Obviously, Microsoft doesn't expect anybody to buy it.
Maybe schools or,
yeah.
You know, like people who buy it in bulk, maybe.
Yeah, it'd be fine for a school.
It's so not future-proof. I just don't understand.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, they're talking about it for like K through 12, but emphasis on the lower end K through like third grade or whatever.
So
I don't even think it's feature.
Leo, did you have this before you went on your trip?
I did not. I got it on Friday.
You got it.
Okay. Yeah.
But
I did get it in time to decide what I'm going to bring with me to Europe. Cause it'd be kind of, I mean, it's really between this and the iPad Pro. I'm going to bring a 15-inch laptop just because.
Leo, these things are so small, you could bring both.
I could bring both. It's the same as an iPad, basically.
Yeah.
And I really like it. I'll let Mary Jo really do the professional review, but as an end user, the only negative is the size of the bezels, I think. I wish if, you know, this could be so cool if they'd gone closer to the edge.
In other words, they could have been an 11, almost 12-inch something.
Same
if they had
size
just,
device, but just there's a lot of
I would have
frame
a problem
on that.
With my gorilla hands, I don't know if I could deal with that.
Well, that's the theory with the tablets. You have to have something to hold it on. But
all right. Especially if you're marketing it to kids and first-line workers who you're going to assume are using it as a tablet with maybe most likely without a keyboard. I think you kind of have to have big bezels for that.
But don't we have pretty good, you know, stray signal palm rejection kind of stuff now?
Yeah. And Apple is almost certainly going to release an iPad Pro that has
that's the thing.
Extremely small bezels any day now.
Right.
Yeah. That's the thing is you're going to, the thing people are going to compare it against is going to have very little bezels.
Yep.
Mary Jo, you and I appear to be in the same room.
I know. It's really cool.
There is really kind of a weird.
It's so cool because you both have bookshelves behind you.
If I swivel this over, am I going to see Mary Jo?
It's very nice. It's very nice. It's very good. There's a unity to this that I really like. So, Mary Jo, lappable? I know that's a concern. Not really, right? It's too floppy.
Not really. So, you know, it's funny. Every time I bring this up, somebody's like, well, if I was sitting back on my couch watching TV, it could be lappable. I'm like, yeah. If I cross my legs and sit in a full lotus position, maybe it's lappable
too. I've tried. It's too... It falls through the hole in your legs when you cross your legs. It's so small.
It's just a speck too long if you're sitting upright in a chair at a 90-degree angle or somewhere close to that. It's just a little bit too long.
When you're in your house, though,
my legs are not short.
Do you have I use computers in front of the TV a lot, but we have these little coffee table type things
this
that we
would
use.
Be fine like for that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean,
no, it's fine.
And
I love
the fact that this, like all the new surfaces, is infinite tilt on the back.
That is great. all the angles.
So you can get any angle you want.
Yep. Yep, that's really nice.
Isn't that nice? Yeah.
And you know what? Even though this isn't lappable, it's what's really different to me from other surfaces is how much better weighted this is. And I noticed that when I had just a few brief minutes of hands-on with it. But the other ones are so tippy because they're not weighted correctly for whatever reason. But this one, like, you can hold it in one hand or even just like, and it's not like, you know.
Unfortunately, though, the way they made that happen was they left out the battery.
Yeah, I know. The battery's tiny, you know, right?
That's the problem.
Okay, what are you getting for battery life, Leo?
I haven't really
real world?
Taxed it, but I think it's about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
that's me too. Well, with it not being 1998, that's actually not very good.
Really? You would want more? You could put chip in here and it'd go all day.
That's the thing. How much battery life does an iPad Pro get? 9, 10 hours?
10 hours, yeah. Solid. Yeah. A solid 10.
I mean, that's just that's a problem.
Right. So Microsoft says 9 hours. So when I heard that, I'm like, okay, I always get half of what they say. So I was guessing 4 to 5, and that's what I'm getting, 4 to 5. And, okay, what am I running to get 4 to 5? TweetDeck? Skype? Notepad, of course. I'm really not doing much, and I'm getting 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And it's, I've seen other people say they're getting 7, 8. I'm like, okay,
if you're just watching videos. No,
people are saying that.
If you just watch Netflix on there, you'd probably get 6 or 7 or 8, maybe.
Right. But I mean, if you're doing real things and switching back and forth, and
it's a nice screen. I really like the screen.
It is a nice screen. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that they couldn't get more battery in here since the iPad does. But the iPad is also using a custom ARM-based chip that's really designed to low power. I don't know what this Pentium Gold is, but
all right, so here's the thing. The iPad is a perfect combination of performance and battery life and excellent screen.
Yep.
It's a high bar for Microsoft. I'm sorry.
We know that. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
It is a very high bar. And you know, they price it the same. If somebody needs, you know, the advantage it has, the iPad can only get stuff from the Apple store. This is a real Windows machine. Did you turn off S right away, Mary Jo?
No, I'm still running Windows 10 S.
Because why not? I mean, you're not going to use Chrome.
Because you want to use Chrome.
I want to run this the way that I think many people who go get this, or their schools buy it for them, or their companies buy it for them, they're going to run 10S. They're not going to be running Pro.
That's true. I really don't. I think the very first thing any school or business is going to do is switch it right out of 10S because the apps to run do not run in S. Yes.
Well, if they have specialized apps, of course, yeah.
Yeah. If they do have some specialized app, they will have to do that. But I'm so far running it in 10S. And one of the reasons I wanted to do that was to compare Edge. And remember when I was running the HP MVX2 with Edge, I was like, I don't know what's wrong with Edge on ARM, but it's terrible. This is better than that.
Yeah, this is pretty usable. Yeah.
See, that to me is the most interesting comparison here is the Surface Go compared to the HP MVX2 across the board, all kinds of different things. I don't know if you saw this, and I think this is since the last Windows Weekly, but I when I came out to Sweden, I intended to test browsers, you know, other browsers, alternate browsers and everything. And in the course of syncing passwords and favorites and things between different browsers, I started using Microsoft Edge in RS5. And I got to say, I do feel like this is the version where they kind of finally got it right. Like I could actually use this. Mm-hmm. And so that combination is actually very interesting all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, it's not super fast, right? And
it's a little faster than the NV2, but...
Yeah. But man, I had such a bad experience with Edge on ARM. I was just like, wow, like what's wrong with that combination of things?
Well, there's
like,
the trade-off. If you go ARM, you can get all-day battery life, but bad performance. Yeah. If you want...
If you go this one, you can get bad performance and no battery.
Yeah, it's not great performance. Yeah. It's kind of NV2. What is... The chat room saying that the Pentium Gold is essentially an underclocked Core M. Is that accurate? I mean, how do you characterize this?
I think... Yeah, and it's a dual core.
Well, that's good.
Chip. It's not a quad core like the upper level.
Dual core is what we've been used to for a long time.
Dual core is fine for productivity tasks and so forth. You could make the argument that a dual core whatever would be fine in this PC for Word and Excel and web browsers and whatever. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But it's a Pentium, and it's kind of weird. It's just kind of an unknown. It's a when you hear Pentium Gold, the first reaction should be, "What is that?" It's right. Something that should not be familiar to anybody.
That's meaningless. Yeah. Is it Atom? It's not quite Atom. It's more.
No, remember the Surface 3 was an Atom, right? It was an Atom.
I think it
was. And it was garbage. It was terrible performance. This is a step or two up from that. I want to say the raw processing performance is something like 2x. The graphics performance of this system is better than that of Surface Pro 3, supposedly. Your systems are both are optimal in that you have the SSD, which will really help, and more RAM, which will really help as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, I mean,
as far as like productivity tests, like you're saying, I mean, everything works fine if you want to just do basic things, you know, like I'm not seeing lagging and typing or anything like that. And you know, that's what a lot of people will do with this, right? They'll do basic Word, Excel,
yeah,
PowerPoint.
I feel like there's this matrix that you kind of go through with every decision. Mm-hmm. And you just want to talk about tech products. Like, what are the things that are most important to you? You know, there's going to be the performance issue, the battery life, just the portability of it. The fact that you might be able to slip this into a purse or something. Or if you have a
spot. Or, and can.
Yeah, which is incredible, right? I mean, or as a man, you know, I'm not going to wear I'm not going to bring like a man purse because I'm not European. But, you know, the ability to carry less, to have a smaller bag, to have a lighter bag is huge. It's the dream. You know, back from the days of the Libretto, remember the little tiny PCs? I've always dreamed of being able to do this thing. My freakish physical form prevents it. But, you know, I would love to have a smaller computer. But it depends on what's important to you.
It does.
I have not used it yet. Well, I've used it, but I've not, you know, I have it for review yet. But I think the level of performance would be perfectly acceptable. It sounds like it's just north of the Qualcomm stuff right now. Mm-hmm. If the battery life was a little bit better. You know, you don't have to hit 22 hours or 20 hours.
Right.
Could you hit 8 hours? Right. You know, this conversation would be very different if that was part of the matrix. And it's not. Yeah. Unfortunately, the battery life sounds like it's pretty terrible.
You know, so on the charging side, there's a couple of good pieces of news, which is one, the Surface connector is way lighter and smaller. So I'm like, okay, I would actually throw that in my bag and not feel like I'm lugging this super heavy.
Yeah. And the prong is on the little brick, right? Like it was on Surface 3. Yeah. So it's a smaller thing. It's like you've got the one length of cable, not the two.
Right.
Right. Which is actually, you know, can be convenient. What about fast charging? Have either of you noticed how quickly it takes to charge it back to strength?
It's quick. I think I had it down pretty close to zero, and I think it came back in like 45 minutes all the way.
It's astonishing.
Yeah.
That helps. Really fast. That really helps.
Yeah, it does. Because then when it's out of battery, you're like, oh.
Do you have to use the Surface prong? whatever.
No, you can use USB-C. I tried that too.
And does it fast charge on USB-C?
My understanding of that one is if it is above a certain wattage level, it will. Yeah. And I think that might be 65. It's something like that.
I used my Envy charger to charge it.
Yeah.
That's fine. The thing is I have Type-C everywhere, and I'm rarely going to. I don't even have the Surface charger with me.
Yeah. I actually forgot. We went on a side trip and I forgot the charger for my laptop. And I was like, oh, God, what am I going to do? It's the first time I've ever done this on a trip. But my wife has a USB-C, you know, so it was fine.
I love USB-C. Thank God Microsoft finally saw the light there.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. I keep going back and forth like, do I need this thing? You know,
it's
like,
a second computer. It's aggressively a second computer. It's not your primary device.
No. I've seen people saying, yeah, maybe I could make it my only computer. I don't think you could.
No. You wouldn't want. You could. You wouldn't
you
want
could.
To.
Yeah, you could.
You'd be unhappy.
I feel like that's the wrong conversation, though, because the people that would use this who are kind of enthusiast types or human beings or whatever. It is a second computer. I don't want my home stuff on my work computer. I want to bum around the house with this other little thing. The other people that use this are going to be in vertical markets. They're going to be out in the field. They're going to be on a factory floor. They're going to be students. You know,
yeah.
It's designed for very specific scenarios. It's nice because it's Windows and you can kind of run anything on it if you want to. But it's, you know, it's still kind of the form factor is just, I think, a little too compromised.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, for the full meal deal.
This is that's exactly what Ed Bott said. We had him on Twit on Sunday, and he said this is the computer for somebody who doesn't, you know, has maybe a PC on the desk in the living room because they've had it forever, but they're not doing anything hardcore with it at all. Maybe a little banking, maybe, you know, a little surfing, whatever. This is a reasonable only computer for that kind of person, a light duty user.
Yeah, you want to sit in front of the TV and.
It's great for in front of the TV.
Check email and browse or whatever. And
I got the pen and I got the mouse and all that stuff.
You did.
Yeah. It's nice.
Have you tested the performance of the pen? Does there seem to be any lag?
Yeah. No, I'm not an artist. You should try.
No, but you can, just the simple act of drawing a line on the screen. You can, if you go into like Sketchpad, which you might have to bring up. Well, okay, there you go. Yeah. I don't know what it looks like on video,
but that's 100% following.
No, that looks good.
Right. I was just going to say, on video, there's something about videotaping this where it kind of tends to lag. It doesn't look like it's lagging at all. You can see that in video.
Yeah, see, and it feels good. I think it's...
That's good. That's something Microsoft does really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's... now, it's giant. It's the whole size.
Yeah, it's the height.
They didn't make a special little one. But I guess you can use your existing one. Yeah. And you could. This is exactly the same as the new Surface pen.
Yep.
How's the magnet? The magnet really strong?
It's good and strong. Yeah, it's not falling off.
Can you pick up the device by holding the pen?
No, you can't. It's not that strong.
Can you balance it on one finger while picking up the pen?
No, but it doesn't. I put it in my backpack, you know, and I'm doing it carefully, and I put it pen up. It doesn't fall off. It stays right there. So. I mean, it's a really nice portable little device. Yeah.
That's going to be really appealing to some people.
Yeah. The mouse is nice and slim. And I would recommend if somebody's going to try to use this as a primary machine, you get the mouse because that just makes it a little bit.
What you're showing right now is really interesting because you can see the color coded type cover, the pen, and the mouse. And this is in hardware. What the plus packs used to be, remember, for like Windows 95 and Windows 98.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It was kind of just a way to personalize the whole experience, and people would kind of poo-poo that. But I always thought, you know, I don't think you understand how important that is to people.
Yeah.
This ability to do what you're doing there with the color coding, it makes it kind of yours in a way that just an all silver computer, you know, kind of isn't.
Yeah.
I think thanks for highlighting.
Yeah, this is the most important thing. Wow, look at that color! I'm getting some interesting. I don't know what I have.
Well,
the rainbow pen. I love this.
OneNote is thinking that's a Sweden like instantaneously.
Oh, really? You've seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hysterical! Line. I forgot. This is.
Yeah, we are.
I didn't know I had edit.
No, it's funny. Like as you do that, it is literally appearing live on my screen.
But that's nice. That's collaborative, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's actually what you want. So let's talk about this.
Okay.
Whoops.
Crossed it out.
I just crossed it. Wrong. I do love the eraser. This is something Apple does not do and they really should do.
Microsoft supports two types of erasers, right? You could do the kind of a swipe erase where it erases the entire stroke.
Right.
Or you can do like a normal eraser where it kind of just erases it, whatever you touch.
Yeah, so if I do this. Oops.
You just touch it. All you have to do is touch it.
Just touch it.
In other
it.
Words, like, that's the mode you're in right now. So,
yeah, because it's an object.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I press the button to get the other mode? Or
no, I think if you look up at the eraser, there's a little down arrow on it. You have to, when you choose it, hold and press and you should get a list of options there.
Yeah, there's a down
arrow. It might not be available in OneNote, but this is something like
isn't. There's only one way to do it. Yeah.
Okay.
Although you notice when I had this kind of thing, it was erasing. Oops. Somehow I got it to erase in pieces. When I was writing to you.
I saw that. I thought so. Well, in an app like Sketchpad,
you can choose. If you pick up the pen, it's in pieces. So.
See.
Well, that's
it. In a pen, it does it in pieces.
Yeah. So you don't have.
I'm doing still doing objects, but because I lifted it. Yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying.
In other words,
yeah.
you're so accustomed to erasing,
right?
That you're kind of erasing it, but it's not really strictly necessary. Mm-hmm. Like you could tap each stroke with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard not to erase it, isn't it? Like you want to erase it.
It's so fun. This illustrates actually the real primary use, especially for a student. It's a great OneNote device,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. and it's just the right size. You might turn it in you know, do it in portrait mode, mm-hmm. but it's just the right size.
What did you think of the keyboard?
This is very much like the NVX2 keyboard. It's that same thing where it's got the little magnetic thing on the bottom, so it kind of tents up, just like the Surface.
I like that.
But you can do it either way. And when you do it, if you don't like the give when you type, putting it on a solid surface. Now, when I type, it's got some. Sorry about that.
Yep.
It's got some. It's got some.
So, by the way, the syncing is fairly unbelievably quick.
It's really quick.
Isn't
that cool? That's so cool.
It's kind of impressive.
Yeah.
It was weird though. When I first got it last Thursday, and I took it out, put the keyboard on, the first hour I typed, I couldn't type any words. Like I'm like, I can't type. Like none of the words are working, and like I'm typing everything wrong, and like I couldn't get used to it.
But you got used to it. Are you talking about the small keycaps?
Is it because it's small or because of the key throw?
I think it's because it's small.
I think it's small because I touch type. I can touch type really fast. So I was trying to just type like I normally do.
You just get better at aiming. But you're right. The travel is an issue. But I think we're getting more because fewer and fewer keyboards on portable devices have decent travel.
Yeah.
Well, but this thing actually does have decent travel.
It's much better than the MacBook. Isn't that funny?
Oh, yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah.
The size is an issue for me. The key throw is not an issue. I think this came up recently. You know, there's something. It's weird as computers have evolved. I'm kind of there's a happy medium, obviously, but the Apple stuff is too short. I think the most modern computers are too long, and then these kind of things. This is like 1.1 millimeter, probably somewhere in that range. Most keyboards are 1.4, 1.5, maybe. I actually think that the key throw on this might be semi-ideal. Mm. It's just they're too small.
So Alex came in and demonstrated that I can tap this and choose the eraser. I don't know why.
I thought so. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know why I wasn't doing it. Maybe because I was. Oh, maybe I was doing it with the eraser. I don't know. Whatever. It wasn't. But now it is.
But yes, you have the two. Yeah. So you do have the two eraser types. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can erase it normally if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. I think I've messed
totally up delete all the notes. It's fine. No, don't worry about it.
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to undelete everything I've done here. No,
I think it's actually, it's like I said, it is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah.
How quickly.
You're seeing
I see
it in Sweden. You're seeing.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing it too. So, yep.
Now, aren't you sorry you gave me edit permissions on the.
Actually, did we do that on purpose? How did that happen?
I think you might have made a mistake. I think you're now regretting it.
That's right. I believe in the restorative powers of OneDrive.
Let's hope.
Wait a minute. Oh, where's my
phone? Like the back.
Where's my front-facing camera? Oh, here it is.
Yeah, you got to choose the camera.
Windows Hello works very well on this, if that's something people care about.
How do I get...
Are you using it? You mean for the camera?
I want to get a picture of me. Yeah, it works. You know what? It does work well. Yeah.
It does. Yep. It's recognized me about 9 times out of 10.
Now, when I trained it at first with glasses, and then it didn't recognize me. But now it recognizes me. So I really like Hello. Is it secure, though? I mean, how much should I trust it?
No, it's secure.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can't be fooled by photos or pictures or whatever. Yeah.
It's a sure a great way to log
it's
in.
It's not a Samsung product, Leo. It's fine.
touch screen for anyone who cares about that. I have yet to touch my screen on this thing, but yeah.
Oh, stop it.
I have not.
What?
I don't use touch on a laptop.
There you go.
I don't need it. I don't want it. I probably get way better battery life without it.
So I'm just putting a little picture of myself in here so you don't forget.
In case we forgot what you look like.
In case you forget who I am. There you go.
Well, you'll be happy to hear that I am also using a touch screen.
Oh, you are? On an iPad? Yeah.
No, on a real computer. Okay. And what that mean? Let's see.
Can you mess with me?
Oh, I can't. I don't know why it's not letting me.
Because you don't have edit privileges. I took them away, the rat.
What's happened?
Oh, no. It's fun. This is fun. Make a little tiny Leo. Oh,
it's reloading the phone. Here we go.
Right here. Oh, yeah. You probably takes a while for you to get the...
It takes a little while, but not much of a little while. I'm getting it already.
Isn't that cool?
Yep.
Yeah. She's yep. stocked on a huge drink.
All right. We're having too much fun. Teardown reveals tiny battery. What? Oh, look. Somebody's drawing in my...
You bastard!
No!
Not surprisingly, given the battery life you guys are seeing, the iFixit teardown revealed that the battery is approximately the same size as a smartphone battery, and that explains the battery life.
Why would they put such a tiny battery in? Come on. Is there no room in here?
Yeah, I have not, to guess that's right? what it is, right? It's kind of shrunken down Surface Pro, basically, and there probably wasn't a lot of room.
If there are any defects on this, you can blame Intel, basically.
I have said that so many times about so many things. Back in the Surface Pro, Surface Pro 2 days, there was a battery keyboard. And I think that this device would benefit greatly from that. So in other words,
that's right.
Yeah, the type cover that has a battery in it, right? Now, it would add weight and thickness and all that kind of stuff. I get it. But if battery life was a concern and you really needed to use this as a sort of a mini laptop, I really think that kind of peripheral would be useful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They also gave it a poor repairability score. But you know what? Welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just curious if the audiences this is targeted at are going to bite on this. Schools, first-line workers, so companies buying them in bulk for first-line workers. You need like a special case if you want it to be break-proof for schools and for people in the front line, right? You wouldn't just leave it with the type cover.
No, and that's what Apple did for their school iPad. They have this big hard rubber device. Yeah. Actually, Logitech sells it. So
So that's going to be something else you would factor into the price of this.
Yeah, there's no room in there, is there?
I feel like this thing's going to be great.
This is not cheap, by the way. I've saw so many headlines saying such a cheap device. I'm like, okay, I paid $730 for the type cover and this device. That's a lot of money.
All
right, so you just raised two big issues. So it's with regards to the price. What this is when a luxury car maker wants to open up the market to a bigger audience, they release a lower-end version that's roughly the same price as the higher-end version of a Toyota or Honda or something, right? And so in the United States, Mercedes is this summer, this year, is releasing an A-series sedan for the first time in this country. They've had in Europe forever. It's going to cost about $35,000. Very expensive, but that's the average price of a new car these days. Mm. So it's... if you kind of want to get into this kind of a thing, it's a way for you to get into a Mercedes much more cheaply than would typically be possible. And I think this does that for the PC market. You know, I think they're not stepping on PC maker toes, right? If people want to buy a cheap computer, those things exist. But if you want something that's premium, here's this thing. It is a premium computer. It's kind of a weird thing. It's because it's kind of a premium mid-market computer or a premium low-end computer. It's kind of it's almost an oxymoron. But I think I think it's a thing. And the other thing that you said though was about whether it's going to be successful, whether this market exists. The thing we're kind of losing sight of maybe is that Microsoft does not sell many computers. Their market share is something like 1 point something 1%. Or 2 point something at most. It's tiny. So. Yeah. Opening this market to a wider audience is kind of a low bar, you know? And I actually do think that if they want to sort of play a little bit in the volume part of the market, this is a step in that direction.
Yeah.
Because the $999 entry-level price of a typical Surface is beyond the means of most people. The $2,000 cost of an actual nice Surface is well beyond the means of most.
True.
You know? I could never buy a Surface Book. I can't afford that kind of computer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I love it, but I could never afford to buy that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went on the day it went on sale in the morning to the Microsoft New York flagship store. Smart. And there was a crowd of people around the table looking at it. I don't think they were actors or Microsoft employees. I think they were actual customers.
Actual people.
All right, Alex Jones, settle down.
But then I'm at the desk buying mine, and I'm the only one.
Like, oh,
it wasn't flying off the shelf or anything. You know, there was no line for it. So, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, we do live in the 21st century. I mean, people want the stuff.
I know.
Ordered it. It came in on through Amazon or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We'll see. Yeah.
When I bought it,
the woman who sold it to me goes, "Oh, you got the silver one." I'm like, "Well, they're all silver." But
that's amazing. That is amazing.
Whoops. Nice choice, Mary Jo.
But then she's like, "Oh, but you got the full type cover." I'm like, "Yeah, I did." It was cute.
Wow.
Was this the Fifth Avenue store in New York?
Yeah.
Nice.
So, in other words, that's the first one she sold.
Maybe.
Or everybody's getting the silver one.
It's a really popular one.
Everybody loves that silver.
Since you like this, you might like some silverware.
Am I imagining things, Mary Jo, or did it not come with 1803 installed?
It came with 1803, but then there was right away a firmware update.
I had three or four. I had a bunch of them.
Yeah, I got a bunch of updates.
Yeah.
I got a cumulative update to it. I got a firmware update.
That's the way it should work. But what you're seeing is normal, right?
So yeah. You always
happened to be a Surface Go Day 1 firmware update, but it was just for the UEFI. Yep. You're always going to get a cumulative update that will bring it up to date with this month. Mm-hmm. There are going to be Defender updates. There's going to be...
I was seeing something that said 1803, but it was like an 1803 cumulative update. But
that's
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Leo, I can assure you a version update on this thing is going to take about 8 days. So if you didn't have 1803, you'd still be installing
it. The updates went fairly smooth.
Yeah.
I'm actually, I'm a fan.
I haven't used it as a tablet. Have you?
You know what I've used it for in a tablet is I put the New York Times crossword puzzle on it.
Mm. So, Leo, if you don't mind, this might be an interesting performance test. Just bring up like the New York Times website, because that's a fairly complex website. Or you could just use our show notes if you wanted. And on camera, rotate the screen.
Oh, mm-hmm. you're being...
Right.
Actually, The Verge is the one I always use for this. The Verge is the piggiest site in history. Yeah. All right.
And to be fair to the computer, maybe unplug the keyboard just to make it.
Just to make it really a challenge, huh?
Yeah, just to.
Okay, ready?
This is a performance issue for Windows in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that.
That wasn't bad. No.
That actually isn't that bad.
That was not bad. And it's scrolling that sucker, which is normally a very challenging thing.
That little thing that it does where it kind of sucks it a little bit.
Squeezes it.
And make a change. It's often very, very slow on Windows.
Yeah.
So I will say for a computer.
That was not bad.
Not terrible.
I think that was pretty good.
Now, mine is not, even when I detach the keyboard, does not go into tablet mode, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so let's find out why. Go into settings.
Oh, here we go. This is my favorite part of the show. When Paul helps Leo figure out how to run Windows. I love this part.
Let's find out why.
Let's go into set. I need to put a keyboard on here. I can't do that without a keyboard.
Yeah, it's easier on a keyboard.
It's a lot easier. Oh, hello. Keyboard in. Keyboard inserted. Hello.
Keyboard.
Oh, I didn't get it all the way in. It's got, by the way, a strong keyboard magnet on this thing.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, they changed it for this one.
Yeah, it's really tough. Okay, settings.
System.
Let me turn down the brightness so y'all can play along with the home version of the game. System.
The top one.
System. Okay.
And then tablet mode about halfway down there. So
use the appropriate mode for my hardware.
That's
don't
amazing.
Ask me and but, don't switch. But now this is the default. I didn't change it. What I want
literally,
is ask.
Hold on a second. Do you mind actually? Could you zoom in a little bit? I'm just curious. That's not what normally is there.
I don't know how to zoom in.
Yeah, I guess.
use the default because I never change this. Is use the appropriate mode for my hardware when I sign in.
Oh, that's when I sign in. I'm sorry.
That's normal.
Yeah, that's fine. What I want is, I'm sorry, I meant the next one down.
It says, when this device. And don't switch. Don't ask me and don't switch.
That's not the default. The default should be, always, unless they changed it, always ask me before switching.
That's so. I didn't change it, so I think Mary Jo, you should look at yours. But
should look, yeah.
So ask me before switching, and now when I detach the keyboard, do I have?
It should ask.
It should ask
when you do keyboard.
It should say, "Oh, do you want to?" Yeah. Now it's That's saved a wonder. Yeah, here it is.
You got it.
And now it's doing
so. It seems to me on a device like this, like if I was actually going to use this, I would probably want this to be in tablet mode when it was in
almost all the time.
Yeah, I would think so.
Because it's so small, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, so I'm going to leave it in tablet mode.
Yeah, mine doesn't automatically switch to it either.
Okay.
So that's something, but that Microsoft changed that from the normal Windows 10 default, is my understanding.
Yeah, yeah, it's doing that on purpose.
Maybe because people don't use it as a tablet.
Maybe.
Remember, you guys, Thurrott was the one who found that internal Microsoft document where it said how few people took the keyboard off, right?
Oh, interesting. Does. Yeah.
And two-in-one Windows, well, at least Surface devices, I believe it was like a really tiny number who ever detached the keyboard. Like, even if I'm watching a movie, I leave the keyboard on because I'm always ready to type something at a moment's notice.
The only time I do it is when I'm doing the New York Times crossword.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in front of the TV or I'm doing something else. And it's actually a really great experience for the crossword because it also supports pen.
Because what you get is the full screen kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And you can even I can zoom in.
I think there are the two pieces of evidence to support what Mary Jo just said are Microsoft no longer bundles a pen with any Surface, basically, other than I think Surface Studio, but any portable Surface. And with the previous generation of devices, although you notice they just stopped doing this, everything that was a Surface was a laptop, right?
Right.
That was the marketing for the previous generation of products. Well, actually, the current generation of products minus this new one. It was the laptop that blah, 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 whatever. They were all laptops. They were kind of creating this fiction that Surface Pro was a laptop. And it might be because that's what they saw from the usage. You know, we can call this thing the tablet that can replace your laptop, but the reality is it's a laptop that can replace your laptop.
So it's great. You can see it's great for a crossword. This is, and I'm handwriting it and it's recognizing. It's great. I have exactly the same program in the iPad. This is my preferred way to use it. And the performance is very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I like it that you can zoom in. You can see that there's no hesitation on that at all. And I doubt that the New York Times is doing anything saying, oh, yeah, this is, we got to do something because it's on a different thing. I mean, this really works. So if you want a $550 crossword puzzle machine,
man,
two thumbs up, a thumb and a pencil up. Yep. But actually, that was one of my primary uses for this.
It was.
Yeah. That was actually my use case.
That's fine.
I like crosswords.
You know why I think I might keep this device, though, even though I don't technically need it, is there's always times when I'm like, I want to have a laptop with me, even though I probably won't use it. But I'm afraid if I don't have it with me, news will break or I'll need to see something on a bigger screen.
So you can head out into the world.
Right.
And it's there.
Yeah, it's a pound plus, right? So you throw it in your bag and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, it's there. And it's like a little peace of mind kind of thing. And also it would be good for us for taking notes, like if you're in a meeting and you know, all I need to do is take a quick couple notes. And I don't want to get a stylus use a phone.
Maybe Ignite's not a good example. Let's say Microsoft has an event in New York and you can walk there from your place.
Right.
And do you bring that?
No. Yeah, if I have to do real work, I bring a laptop.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I think there are going to be a lot of people work, who are going to try to make this work.
Yeah. I feel like because it's not lappable enough, I would go with the laptop. And also, I like, you know, everybody's going to laugh at me when I say this, but when I bought my laptop, I bought it with a Core i7. And everyone's like, oh, why? Because you run Notepad? I'm like, no, because
you write really quickly.
I know, and I want to use the browser at a fast pace. Like, I don't want to wait for the browser. Like, sometimes I really need the browser to be fast. And I know that sounds like a first world problem, but I feel like that is why I need a real laptop sometimes.
Yeah, that's
it. You don't have to explain that to me.
No, that's fair.
I get it.
Perfectly fair. Yeah. Although if you used Edge, it's much more.
I am using Edge. I'm making myself use it.
All right.
Actually, back when you bought this, Edge might not have even existed. Was this a Windows 8 machine or something? Or when you bought it? The one you're talking about? Is that the
Windows 7 was my original Acer. My Acer S7, right? I think it was a Windows 7.
It was a Windows 7 device, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We've come so far.
Speaking of those firmware updates, that is everybody should be getting those, right? Or all the Surfaces anyway.
On Surface Book 2 the other day, there was this dump of what I believe was every single driver on the machine was replaced, like every single one. The list is like 37. It's crazy. Yeah. And over the past week or so, we've seen that with not quite every Surface, modern Surface, but Surface Pro 4, the 2017 Surface Pro, Surface Laptop, Surface Book 2. And then we've also seen smaller updates for just Surface Pro 3 and Surface Go that are just UEFI related that don't fall into this category. But with the other ones, Microsoft has specifically said this is to address the processor vulnerabilities that Intel found, Spectre and Meltdown. And it is astonishing how many things are getting updated all at once. I don't believe there have ever been firmware updates for any Surface PC to match what we're seeing this month. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
I'm going to start doing big check marks now.
I see those check
next
marks.
To every, as we do everything, I'm just going to do big check marks. So you'll just go boom, like, and you'll know it's done.
Actually, if you could make the check mark like a little Leo photo.
Oh, or maybe I'll get a rubber stamp of some kind.
Yeah, like a little.
Oh, man, I'm going to mess with you guys now. Boy, you're gonna be sorry you gave me edit privileges. okay. Yeah, even Surface Go got an update. We all got just for the firmware. Okay. Do we not have to worry about Spectre mitigation? I don't think we do. No, but there's no exploits out there as far as I know.
Well, the worry, actually, is this kind of thing. So Microsoft just replaced every single driver on their Intel-based computers. Is this thing 10% slower now?
Oh, right, because isn't that the side effect?
Maybe.
Of these? Yeah.
And good luck trying to prevent a firmware update from coming down on a Surface device.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, that's the worry. I'm not – honestly, am I worried about security issues? No, not right now, but these fixes are impacting the performance of the computers we use.
Right.
And so I don't know. They've never really discussed that angle, but these releases are mammoth. Like I said, they are historic in the scope of Surface. I've never seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm. I've just drawn a graph of the...
Sorry. Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry.
You're like a Stephen King story.
What is this? Cujo, the day the Go came alive?
We can't stop you from doing this.
No, I'm the child. I'm the children of the corn. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's like you just gotta. What are we gonna do? Nothing. Just smile and keep going. Right? Yeah.
I know. Normally, it's the cats wrecking the notes.
Putting it away. But it is fun. I mean, I have to say, with the pencil, the pen, and the I like that. It's fun. I'm not tempted to do that on the Lenovo. That's very much of a work device. But on the
The funny thing is, the computer I'm using for this podcast is a Lenovo ThinkPad X1.
Nice.
Yoke.
That's the one you brought.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just had a little bit of trouble there playing with the pen thing, and I'm like, why isn't this working? And I had just used Windows Ink in Windows Mail on a touch-based computer. It worked fine with my finger. And on this one, it would not work.
Huh.
You actually have to use or at least on this computer, I had to use the pen to make it work.
Huh.
So it took me a second to figure out why it wasn't working.
It comes with a pen, though. It's right there in the little slot there.
Yeah. Yep.
And by the way, Paul, you'll be very happy to know that when you get tired of Windows, that X1 Yoga runs Linux beautifully. Beautifully.
Mint.
confused that you think I will get tired of Windows.
No, I put it. So I had the second generation X1 Yoga. I think you have the third, right? You have the new one.
It's whatever the newest one is, yeah.
Yeah, but I on the second, I have enough Windows machines now with the Surface Go. I thought, well, I can. You know, that's the older one. I'm going to put. I put Entergos mm-hmm. Linux on it. Installed beautifully. Mm-hmm. That's the one with the OLED screen. It looks gorgeous.
Which one is which version? Of Linux?
I use it's a installer for Arch, so it's basically Arch Linux, which I'm a fan of. But I don't like to. Arch is designed for.
What was the name you said though?
Entergos, which means ancestor. Ancestor. Entergos. Okay. It's from Spain. But I anybody who's looking for a Linux that installs nicely on a Lenovo ThinkPad. You know, everything is hand. The only thing that it doesn't do the fingerprint reader, but that I'm not surprised because that's a security device. Yep. You know, that's not going to have open drivers.
It's TPM based.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it handled a high DPI. It's a gorgeous machine. I love it on the OLED. It's beautiful. Yeah. All right, let's take a little break. We'll get back to talking about Windows. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm in a derailing mood today. I apologize. Let me derail you one more time and talk about my favorite content management system. You don't use this, right, Paul? You have to suffer with something else, or are you?
Finally, no, I do use this.
Oh, you finally?
That's
funny. On the old site had some awful CMS. You're happy to go to a WordPress.
Jeez, we used to. What was the thing we had?
It was some weird thing the super site was running on. I remember
Cold Fusion. We used to have Cold Fusion.
Oh, you wrote it probably, right?
I wrote. So the CMS I originally had at Superset, I wrote it in VBScript ASP, classic ASP.
Wow.
And then the company I worked for used Cold Fusion, which was terrible.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Even though it's really just Delphi, you know that, right?
Do not dismirch.
Okay.
The Bible.
The super Bible.
Still a classic.
You know, this Delphi 3 Super Bible is so big, it actually can cover Paul up entirely. I just put it.
It holds up monitors really well.
That's a heavy, heavy
potential usage.
In those days, you needed to know Chapter 40, T-Bevel. You needed to know that. Yeah. That was a good chapter.
Everything descended from T-Object.
Yeah, T-Object.
Go back to page zero. I'm sure it's T-Object.
It probably is, right? You have Based a page object. Zero, you really are a geek. Yes, Paul is absolutely right. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you T-Object. The very first object.
Ancestor of every
Delphi class.
Class of Delphi or something.
Yeah. Everything you... So this really is just a reference manual. There's no actually no...
Is it just a reference manual, Leo, or is it... Something
is
so much
every,
more.
Is every single function and property and so, is it all?
Yeah.
In
so
here?
The issue at the time was Berlin did not document this accurately or at all, and so this was actually at the time.
Can you blame them?
The only complete reference to their own class library.
Wow, that's a lot of work. Holy cow! And still a classic. I'm proud to have a copy. So
it's better than the Bible.
Our show today brought to you by a more modern and yet at the same time more popular, even kind of more historic content management system. It's been around since the 2000s. I remember getting my first WordPress installation. Now, 31% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. 31%. WordPress is the place to go if you need a website, whether for yourself. I finally got my kids getting their own site up. And I've always said this. If you don't create your own presence on the web, somebody else will do it for you. So that when they look for your name on the web, that they're in charge. The other people are in charge. You need to make a great gift for a 14 or 15-year-old parents would be a WordPress.com site. Get them started right. Buy the domain name, you know, their name if you can get it, and set up a website and have them put like their best schoolwork on there, pictures of the soccer game, get them do a little writing, that kind of thing. Great way to create a presence on the web. I know a lot of people say, oh, I have a Facebook page. You don't own that. Mark Zuckerberg owns that. I don't. Your Twitter feed, same thing. You need to have a place you control. It's your place. And man, if you're a business and you don't have a website, I feel like it's almost like not, you know, in the old days, if you didn't have a phone or an answering machine, it's like that. You need to have a website. Before I do business with anybody, and I'm not the guys who clean the gutters, the gardener, The repair guy, the insurance company, I go to the web to look up their listing. You don't want Yelp to determine your reputation on the net. You can do so much better. Go to WordPress.com. I know you've resisted because, well, it's hard, right? No. Note, you don't need to know CSS or HTML, any technical stuff. They do it all for you. They make it very easy. You could choose from hundreds of designs to match your, you know, what you want, what you think of yourself, your create your image of yourself. It's funny because Abby ended up using the same template I did, just kind of coincidentally. But it's a very nice, flexible template. She was able to really, and she loves how it looks. It's completely hassle-free. WordPress takes care of the hosting, the security, the software updates. In fact, when I ran my own site, I did my own self-hosting. That was part of the problem, was I was doing all of that and not blogging as much. And I wanted to put more content up there. Oh, and by the way, you can put audio, you could put video, you can upload images, you can import and export content to and from your WordPress website. It's your place. It's kind of fun. This is a great way to get your name out there, get your look out there, get more business. Yes, you can do e-commerce, everything from a simple and very effective buy button to like a whole store. And it is not expensive. It actually turns out to be less than I was paying to do my own self-hosted WordPress. WordPress.com. They have a great app. You can manage your site in the go. It's easy. And when you need help, they're there 24/7 to give you a hand. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off that new plan purchase, any new plan purchase, when you go to WordPress.com/windows. And you'll be telling them that you heard this on Windows Weekly. WordPress.com/windows. 15% off your new website. No Delphi Super Bible required. Windows is the keyword. WordPress.com/windows. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. And I thank the Delphi Super Bible for the support of my monitor. No, actually, I'm really glad to have this. But next time you're out here, I got to get you to autograph it.
Yeah.
And then we'll find Gary Brent, Richard Bagdasian, and Steve Tendon.
Yeah.
Do you stay in touch with the guys?
Gary Brent, unfortunately, has passed away.
Oh.
Well. He was the guy who got me into writing.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's neat. That's really neat.
Will you pass on some wisdom from Gary? Because years after this, I asked him, I said, I'm just curious, like, why you thought I could become a writer? I'd never written anything, that you'd never seen anything I'd written, certainly. And in waiting for him to, he was the smartest person I've ever known. So I thought, this is going to be beautiful. And he said, I could just tell.
You were open for more.
I could tell. Like, you're useless.
I looked at you and I said, that guy's a writer. He probably said, that guy's a masochist. I think we can get him to write hundreds of books.
Yeah. What do you think about sitting in a cave for multiple hours and writing about nonsense that no one's ever going to want to read? I'm like, I like it.
I bet you.
I like where this is heading.
I bet you hundreds of people blessed your name. Hundreds for writing.
I think
this.
You were right. I think you were very
accurate.
At least 100. More in three figures easy.
So by the time that book came out, Mitchell Waite was a nut job.
The weight press. Yeah. I, you know, we've had Mitch on because now he's a birder, right? He sure even is. Sent me, I mentioned, yeah, I think I might take up birding. He sent me the bookshelf of birding books, but his company does all the big birding apps now.
That's the guy, iOS. Tim O'Reilly, I met. He wanted me to do a Windows Me book, and I was like, over my dead body.
Tim
that
said,
was a good call.
That
could
finally
be arranged. Said no to a book.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning, isn't it? Paul, keep up the good work. All right. Now everything's gone to sleep, and I don't know what we're doing next.
Sure.
Too bad I don't have
a
portable, quick, easy.
Yeah, if only there was some way.
Something some that responded way. Instantly to my every command. The pen went flying when I picked it up. Oh, dear.
Oops.
Next, let's revisit the Microsoft Managed Desktop. That can't be right.
Didn't think we were going to be doing this a week later, but here we are.
Is this what you talked about last week?
We did, but because of some current events, we need to talk about it again.
Mary Jo's going to be too polite here. Could I just maybe?
No. Let me say my piece, and then you can jump in. Okay. So last week on the show, we talked about a story about this thing called the Microsoft Managed Desktop. Brad found the name in some Microsoft, I don't know, job posting or something. And then I dug around and found out what it was. So I wrote what I thought was a fairly clear blog post explaining this is something Microsoft's building out as an option for business customers where they would be able to buy the device, get the regular Windows updating for the versions of Windows preloaded on it, get financing for it, and it would be all sold as a subscription. So it's like device as a service, right? I thought that was fairly clear. After that happened, a number of people rewrote my story on various sites, and fact kind of became fiction very quickly. I have people asking me crazy things, and I'm like, where are you seeing this? Like, people are like, okay, so I'm not buying Windows 10 this way. I'm sticking with 7. I'm going back to XP. I'm not doing this. I refuse to let Microsoft charge me for Windows and make me buy a device from them. And I'm like, hold on. Like, where are you seeing this? And it turned out a couple of sites took liberties, and I would say for clicks, and made this into this, Microsoft is going to screw you over with a new plan where you can't refuse updates and you're going to have to take Windows and your device and pay for it, pay Microsoft for it. It was a lie, but that didn't stop any of these sites from saying that. They, you know, a couple people who rewrote it kind of jumped to the next conclusion and they're like, okay, they're not doing it for consumers now, but you know that's what's next. Well, guys, I don't know if you remember 2014. Remember the rumors of Windows 365, which was Microsoft was going to make everybody pay for Windows as a subscription? That never actually happened, did it? We still are not hearing this is going to be a consumer thing.
It happened because we fought to preserve the integrity.
That must be it.
We stopped them cold, Mary Jo.
That must be it. Yep. I don't know. Like, these stories have taken on a life of their own. I'm like, okay, if you're going to rewrite somebody's story, at least try to say what they said. Like, yeah. Like quote it maybe, or like say they said this. But what I was wondering is this: if this is going to happen, instead of saying, you know what's next, Microsoft's already planning to do this to consumers, and that's not the case.
Well, welcome to the modern world. I mean, that's...
I know.
This is life, right? Life is,
yeah,
we know.
I didn't want to use some of the criticisms that Paul was quite blunt with this morning on Twitter, which was pretty hilarious.
Well, that's why we read Paul's Twitter. That's why.
Yeah.
There are just scumbags out there get hits for publishing baloney, and I just can't deal
with it.
That's
actually true. That's exactly right.
They know they're scumbags. They know they're not right. They know that this is baloney. I'm trying to be kind here. I don't know.
You are. I know. They whip people into a frenzy. You know, like everybody who asked me, I'm like, believe me, if Paul or I hear that Microsoft is going to do this, we will be the first ones to write about this. We're not going to hide it. We're not going to, you know, let you
listen,
get socked or whatever.
The reality of Microsoft is ridiculous enough. There's no reason to make stuff up.
That's true.
What they're actually doing is ludicrous, right, in many cases. So, like, we're not going to, we don't have to make stuff up. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
This guy just gets hits by publishing crap, and I just makes me nuts. And I just...
Well, he wasn't the only one who did it either. Saw.
Yeah, but it's a snowball effect. You know, you can kind of see where it comes from.
Yep.
No. The excrement.
So far,
machine.
Business only. If this even ever comes to market, I think it will come to market. I think they're fairly far along with this. Maybe they'll even talk about it at Ignite. I don't know, but I think it's gonna happen. But business option only, not forced. So, yeah.
So, what you're describing is Windows 365. Can we just get it cut through the baloney and say this?
The truth comes out.
Mary Jo Foley has confirmed.
Microsoft is going to screw consumers over with Windows 365. Okay.
Thank you. See, how hard is it to say that?
Is it safe to say, though, that that is not on Microsoft's roadmap? I mean, do we really know?
I don't think it's on their roadmap.
They always acted like they wanted to do something like that, right?
Well, I don't think they're acting. I mean, I think they would. Subscription revenue is ideal for any big company.
It's not unreasonable.
Right?
They're going to continue to be working on it.
Yeah. They want to have as many things for sale as a subscription as they can.
Right.
What they can't do is force people to take something that's free right now, and suddenly you're like, oh, and I'm going to pay for Microsoft to force updates on me twice a year.
Right. Microsoft is following the mobile platform model with Windows. So iOS and Android are, you know, no one pays for those directly, Right. There was a really good story about Spotify and Fast Company this past week, and they had quotes from Tim Cook from Apple, and he said something I found to be very disingenuous. And what he was trying to do was compare.
I hated that. I know what you mean.
The Apple Music comparison to Spotify, and what he said was, "We're not trying to make money from this." You know, as if they were doing it from – we just love music.
We just
love
music. No. And we feel that humans should make music. And
that's great. So the way you make money on something that's free is you sell these services on the side that are this subscription revenue that is so desirable. So things like, you know, the storage on iCloud in the case of Apple, Apple Music subscriptions, this coming Apple TV service, whatever it may be. Like there are these things, you know, they have a captive audience of hundreds of millions, if not billions of people. You try to find these things that you can kind of carry along on a subscription. The operating system is never going to be that thing. You know, when enterprises license Windows, they're not really technically paying for the software. They're paying for the support.
Right.
They're paying for the, you know, there's a whole package that comes involved. It's the way a car company or an auto dealer makes money. You know, the overhead on the car is very low, very high, I guess. The amount of money they make on the vehicle is very small, typically, unless you're an idiot. The way they make money is by the simonizing and the, you know, the additional services and can we sell you an extended warranty? And that's what this stuff is. This is the same model, really.
I mean, there is something called Windows 10 Enterprise. There's an E3 and an E5. I think the E3 or one of those two just went away. But that is Windows 10 sold as a subscription to enterprise customers who want that support. It's not like, you know, Microsoft is taking the operating system, and charging you
that
money.
In other words, they're not saying, look, Windows costs $109.
Right.
So what we're going to do is we're going to charge you $11 a month for 2 years or whatever, however that works out. I can't do math. That's not what that is, but whatever, you know. And then at some point in time, there's going to be a new version of Windows, and we're going to start charging you for that. That's not what this is. It's not. No. You're not really the Windows is the thing the other things run on. You know, Microsoft tried consumer services and didn't do very well.
Yeah, like you just said though, like if Microsoft could charge a monthly subscription fee for Windows, they would. They would love to.
Can I just say I don't think there's even anything wrong with that.
Right.
I understand consumers don't want it. They're used to buy. This is the hard thing is to change. If they'd started that way, nobody would be complaining about it. But the hard thing is to take something that people bought outright or more likely got free with the computer. They thought free with the computer.
Okay. But how do you fix that problem? It's easy, right? That you can look, we can point to, like, let's use two obvious examples of services that are such no-brainers that are subscriptions compared to the, you know, on-prem or whatever you want to call it, ad hoc version. Office 365, right? Because they throw in this case, like a terabyte of storage per person in a home that's like five people. It's
Give them some.
You know, if you had to buy Office, one version of Office for every person in a four or five person household, you're talking about several hundred dollars. It's very expensive. But if you say to them it's $99 a year, they're like, yep, done.
Right.
The other one is music, frankly, right? Because we can be numbnuts and hand curate our stupid little MP3 collections and put them on hard drives and move them to devices and do all that stupid stuff. Or you could pay Google or Apple or not Microsoft anymore, Spotify, whatever it is, $9.99 a month or $14.99 for a family plan, and everyone gets all the music in the world. You know, not really, but like 30, 40 million songs.
Yeah.
No brainer. You know, for most people, I know there are people listening to this who've got to fall in the other minority portion of both of those arguments. I get it. You know, it's a diverse world. It's fine. But for most people, those two things just make sense. So when you look at Windows, I think the problem is they can't find a thing where you're like, this is a no-brainer. You know, they did it for Office on consumer and commercial. They're able to do it for Windows and commercial because, again, there's a whole support network and partners and additional things you can layer on top of it and other things you're using on the side of it. It's incredible. It's a whole ecosystem of stuff. But Windows, you know, and PCs, it's like you give someone a PC, they're done. They're not really thinking. Mm-hmm. No one sees value in like, well, you can go from home to pro, you know, just pay $5 a month. No one's going to do that. It's harder to make that jump.
And if Google and if Apple did it, then maybe Microsoft could do it. But they offer the operating system for free.
Yeah,
so,
that
I mean,
makes it a little harder, yeah.
I think the moment that Apple said macOS upgrades are free, iOS upgrades are free, this whole mod, this any plans they may have had crumbled. They could never. You can't go back from that chasm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason this comes up in my mind is because router manufacturers now really want to charge a monthly or yearly fee.
Oh, jeez. Really?
And that's hard to do because everybody has that reaction. But I don't think it's such a big deal because you want them to have some skin in the game so they keep updating it.
Boy,
and so what they've been doing, so Plume is one of them. And Plume basically said initially it'll stop working once you once you stop paying the $99 a year.
Plumbing was like this, you know. I'm flushing the toilet and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
Plumbing, the guy doesn't come out once a month and make sure everything's working. You would pay for that. If you would wanted it, you'd pay for that. And you want a router that is constantly updated with new features. And so what Eero does, and Eero's a sponsor, but what Eero does is they charge, they have the same thing. It's a $99 Eero Plus. You get a lot of benefits out of it, you know, like filtering and stuff. I think that's, frankly, if router manufacturers could figure out a way to make that work, that they will. And it's not unreasonable because you want a router where the guy cares enough to keep it up to date. It's a big security issue. Mm. And I think that's not too far off from what Microsoft.
Okay. You know? That's interesting. But to Mary Jo's point,
your initial reaction is exactly what the world said. Yeah. Like, screw that, man. What are you talking about?
But I think that's probably many people's initial reaction to Office 365.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
I don't understand this. They think they got it for free with a computer, which they didn't, or they think it comes as part of Windows, which it doesn't, or they did pay $129 for the home and student for it, whatever they call it these days. And they're like, I can use this for 7 or 8, 10 years, whatever it is. Why would I pay $99 a year for something else?
Right.
But you kind of have to show it to them. And they're like, oh, okay. A lot of them will say that's actually kind of incredible, especially if they have a family involved, whatever it might be. Yeah. But I don't know. What Mary Jo said earlier, or I think it was Mary Jo, basically was just that if they could, they would. There's no doubt about that. I just don't think smarter people than us have thought about this, and they can't think of a thing where they can show you the plate and say, yeah, what you're showing me makes sense. I will pay that fee. I just don't think it exists in the consumer market for Windows.
Yep.
It's a conundrum. Because you are, I mean, look at Microsoft is constantly updating Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that costs money. That costs them, you know, I have probably come around on this. I doubt I liked the idea initially, but as you think about it, you kind of, it's like me paying, I prefer to pay for a software than get it for free or a service on the web than to get it for free because I want them to, like I used to use Delicious for my bookmarks, right? It was free.
Yeah.
Gone. So along comes Pinboard and Machez sheds, you know what? You want this to succeed, so I'm going to charge you and I'm pay for it happily. I think that's not a – we've seen the cost of free software.
It's not a bad model. Something like you said, Windows, it costs money for Microsoft to update Windows. Yes, it does. Apple and Google also update their software. It costs them money too. And so they're making it in some way.
I understand, right. Mm-hmm.
I think the enterprise licensing of Windows, not
Apple
that it's
subsidized.
Apple
sells hardware. Google sells you. Hardware.
Google sells you, yeah. Well, I mean, Google licensed Android too, right? I mean, the version of Android that most people are getting has been paid for by a hardware manufacturer.
I think you can make the case, though, that more money is made by the advertising and the use of Google search and all.
Oh,
that.
For sure, but for sure, it's absolutely okay to subsidize it. This is Apple Music runs at a loss. We're never going to find out what it is, but they're subsidizing it because it's part of the whole ecosystem. It keeps people involved with the Apple products that do make money. For them, it's probably fine. They're never going to say it like that. They have to pretend they love music, and that's why they do it. Well, I mean, it's baloney. But Google, they're never going to talk about, we're monetizing you, obviously. But one thing, you know, to be fair to Google, I often, for many years, had a problem with the fact that they were an advertising company. They generated billions of dollars, and they were able to just enter markets at will. and just throw things at the wall and see what stuck. And it's always kind of bugged me. But the thing that kind of makes it a little less onerous is they actually make pretty good stuff. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stuff they make is really good, whether it's a web service or a mobile app or whatever. And we're at the point now where I think, you know, a lot of consumers would pick it, even if it wasn't the default choice, you know, whatever it might be, Chrome or Google Search or whatever. It's interesting. It creates an interesting problem. And the other thing with Google, when you look at their revenues every quarter like I do, the percentage of the revenues from Google come from advertising. It used to be like 97%. This past quarter, I think the number was 84%. They still make most of their money from advertising. But guess what? Those enterprise things, that's starting to pay off. You know, they're starting to make money on it. It's interesting. That's all.
Yeah.
People really hate this. They're saying, Leo, you're pro-greed.
Leo, come on. You're like a – you love guy, Linux.
If the guy wasn't named Noodles, I'd take that personally. But,
pro-greed.
Maybe it's because I own a business now and I understand that you can't – you know, that you have to – the business to continue has to have revenue.
Yeah. You're the guy from Wall Street. What's his name? Gordon Gekko.
Greed is good, man. Greed is good. No, greed isn't good, but businesses need to survive. And, you know, I know people really hate Adobe, what Adobe's done. And the key is that if you're going to do this, you got to offer value. And the problem is that people are conditioned that they buy software once and that's that. If you never want your software updated, fine.
Adobe might be an even better version. Example of this thing, people used to buy, they would buy Adobe Photoshop 3, and then the next 7 versions would come out and they wouldn't upgrade. There was all this stuff going on. At some point, the upgrade becomes expensive. It was several $100 to buy Photoshop. It's very expensive. And now they have this subscription where it's basically, what, 10 bucks a month?
I think it is. And you get the whole suite. Happily.
It is the Office 365 model.
Right.
You know, it's smart. And that company, by the way, is super successful.
Right.
That's working out great for them.
It's like, oh, no, I paid for Netflix. I don't need to pay them again. You know?
Yes.
I bought them. An HBO subscription.
I own all of the movies on Netflix, don't I?
What do you want? You want more money? Well, I already bought a subscription.
Yeah,
I used to say that about taxes. What do you mean I have to pay taxes? I just paid them last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just you know, the problem is the world's changing. And Microsoft, sure, they made plenty of money when everybody bought a new PC every few years. But that ain't happening anymore.
Yeah. Right. What an ironic problem no one ever foresaw for the PC industry. Their products are so stable and reliable, no one ever needs to upgrade anymore.
Apple's seeing the same thing with the iPad.
It's just like a bizarro world. What happened here?
Apple's seeing the same thing with the iPad. And I think that's part of the reason Microsoft sells hardware now. Maybe not, but you know.
So it could be crappy again?
Yeah. Let's screw this thing up. People are clearly not buying new stuff.
We're going to bring the level of quality we have in Windows to hardware.
No. We're joking. Joking. All right, let's talk about I'm so confused by the rockets and the stones and the Redstone 5 is when, what, how? It's Windows Longhorn. No. That's wrong.
It's the next version of Windows coming in October this year.
1810.
1809, actually, because it'll RTM, 1809. Which we're not supposed to say.
It's 1809 because it's coming out in October.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Oh, awesome. No, but you add one. You always add one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always add one. No, because it's computer science. It's always zero and then one.
Because 1803 came out in May. No, wait a minute. That didn't work.
It's kind of dead, but.
Okay, never mind. So build 17730 came out last week, and 33 came out this week, just before the show. So let's talk about those.
Yeah.
What is a retail OOBE? Because it's got it in the 1730.
So this is the one from last week. So I was excited to install this build because they said that people in the Insider program, when they rebooted after this install, were going to see the out-of-box experience that people would see when they upgraded to it in the real world, right? So in other words, when it was into October, you get these screens that come up. They like look at your privacy stuff again, blah, blah, whatever.
Out-of-box experience, OOBE.
Yes.
Got it.
So that's an old-fashioned term. They probably don't even call it that anymore.
Because there's no box, Paul.
No box, yes. Well, once it goes to Golden Master, Leo, see it, then it heads into a box.
So they can print the floppies. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
So I brought two computers with me here to Sweden. One of them is the computer we already discussed, the X1 Yoga, and the other one was a Surface Book 2. And that computer is running RS5. It's on the Windows Insider Preview. I've been having really bad problems with it over the past couple of weeks. The performance is really bad. It's acting weird. And I kind of figured at one point I was going to just kind of blow it away. And so I use this build as an excuse to do that, because the first time I installed, I upgraded to it, you know, as you do in the Windows Insider program, I didn't see any of that stuff they were talking about. So I reset it. And when you reset it, you do see that stuff, right? So there are actually some additional screens now in setup. And some of them are actually really interesting, and they're going to require me to spend some time on them. For example, one of the screens had to do with OneDrive. And the idea was, hey, do you want to put all of your files in OneDrive instead of using the normal folders you might use for documents and pictures and so forth? I chose no, because I didn't want to screw with that right now. But this is something I need to kind of test side by side. But that's brand new. That's very interesting. You know, the privacy stuff hasn't been updated yet again, because they got to keep that moving to keep the EU away. What was the other thing that changed? I can't remember. But I didn't see it when I upgraded. I had to blow it away. And then a new build came out this week with another thing.
Yeah. Today's build is, I guess the only new feature is File Explorer finally has a dark theme that actually looks fully dark.
Yep. Just,
right? I mean, because it was weird before, it didn't really look like a totally dark theme based on things I've seen people say, but now it is the way it is meant to be and how it will ship, I guess. That seems to be the only brand new thing in the build. Everything else that was listed today were known issues, fixes. So they're getting closer towards the end of Redstone 5 planning and development.
It's possible we have literally hit the feature complete stage. You know, they'll never come out and say this, but you know, this File Explorer dark mode thing is something they talked about a long time ago. It's been in builds, but only partially implemented. It's tough because it's a legacy desktop application. So God knows it was probably written in P code or something, but it's just, you know, it's not like the modern apps where they can kind of flip a switch and make that stuff work a little more easily. So it looks, I just realized I left the computer upstairs, so I can't see it, but it's installed. I just don't have it in front of me yet.
Yeah. And then we didn't say about last week's build, but I guess they had pre-announced that your phone would be working with Redstone 5, that your phone app that allows you to more easily exchange things like photos and bookmarks and all these kinds of things between Windows 10 and Android and iOS. But as of last Friday's build, 17730, it actually is starting to work now.
Well,
So in a limited way.
lots of asterisks there. Does not work with iOS.
Right. It doesn't work with
yet. You know, it's probably always going to be fairly limited.
Not my phone, your phone.
Right. Well, but that's another thing.
Sorry.
Based on just common sense and logic, I think this thing should be called my phone, not your phone. It's my phone. You know,
why
when I interact
call
with
it
the,
my phone. Why don't
I don't
they
know?
That's
I don't know.
A better name.
It used to be my computer. It's my computer. You know, it's my PC today. It's the name of the thing. It's not your PC. I don't know. But Microsoft inconsistency, or you know. Like two opposing magnets. They never quite...
Not my phone. It's your phone. No, it's your phone.
So the first version of this only works with photos. Eventually, it's going to support notifications and messages. It does look just like the thing they showed off at Build. So the UI hasn't changed. That's nice. I found it to be really annoying. My phone and the computer kept displaying dialogues or pop-downs that would say it was reconnecting to the device. So it's doing some kind of a Wi-Fi connect kind of thing.
You have to be on the same Wi-Fi network, right, to make it work.
This is ugly.
Well, it's a good idea. I guess I have to think like a normal person, because I use it more for work type things. So if I got a laptop in for review, I would take my phone and I would take photos of it. And the way I used to get those photos to the computers, I would connect the cable and just kind of sync them over. The way I do it now is my photos are auto-synced to Google Photos, so I just load that in the web browser, and then I download them to PC. that's kind of an extra step when you think about it. You know, I'm uploading and downloading, really. I'm not managing, but it happens in the background. You know, this is kind of nice because you just bring up the app and you see the photos in your phone. Allegedly, I actually, in the version I have, you can only see 25 photos, but the 25 most recent photos. But whatever. You know, I think the theory here is you take a lot of photos with your phone, but you occasionally, as a normal person, will want to edit them. And that the PC is the ideal place to do that. And you can do that. It should save it back to the phone, right? There's some kind of value to that, perhaps. Or maybe you want to share them to social media and do it in a more elegant fashion than it might be possible on a phone. It's a good idea. Mm. So we'll see. Right now, I actually disabled it. I found it to the connection and reconnection thing to be a little too busy and annoying. Yeah. I was actually really worried what it was doing to the battery life on the phone.
Oh, right.
Mm. But I'll give it a chance. I mean, it's an app. So the way they implemented it was really strange. I think it was the previous build. The app was there, but it didn't do anything.
Right.
And then they released a new version of the app to the store, but it didn't automatically upgrade to this version. You had to go to the store and download it, and then it would, you know, it's weird. But
weird.
I think the point of it is it will ship in the product, meaning the next version of Windows 10. But then because it is an app, it can then be upgraded or updated every day if they want it to be, right? Because it's not a core part of the OS. So it's probably the right way to do it.
So this is how we're going to start getting back to getting our phone messages to show up on the PC, right? Because it doesn't work anymore.
The thing they had before, well, the thing they have, I guess what they have today technically, this, which is just phone settings or whatever, you kind of link your phone to the Microsoft account.
Right. But mine doesn't show up with messages anymore. It used to.
Yeah. Well, because it's something – I think you actually configure it in Cortana and because that's really obvious. so I think having an app – like in other words, I found it to be very unreliable.
So it cracks me up. All the hoops you have to jump through
to
get it to do what Apple just does because it's all owned by the same company.
When you control the platform, it's a wonderful thing, right? You can build the stuff at the back. There are third-party utilities on Android, and actually the Messages app on Android that Google makes now has a web app, which you can use to get your to send and receive messages on Windows. That actually works great.
Just get everybody to buy Apple products, and then we won't have to worry about this. Messages.
So I agree that
again.
there is a simple kind of matrix-like quality that I and that's absolutely great for a lot of people. The nature of Android though is such that you can run a background process on Android that will intercept text messages and allow this kind of thing to happen. There's no reason why this can't be fairly elegant. I think it will be okay. I agree it will probably never be as seamless as what Apple does because, again, you know, when you own the whole widget, it's easier to do this kind of stuff.
You know, if you really want annoying.
Yes.
I know Microsoft listens to you guys, so I'm just going to, you know, put this out there. When you first install the new Windows, computer setup, Windows computer, it says, hey, we'd like to integrate with your phone. Give us your phone number. As if something wonderful is going to happen.
I know.
Something wonderful is going to happen, Leo. You're going to download the Microsoft launcher.
You're going to get, no, you don't even, not even that. You get a spam text that says, would you Microsoft launcher?
Right. So, right. Okay.
That's all I get is a text.
Unless you have, it's worse than iOS. Because if you have iOS, what you get is a spam text that says, would you like to download the Microsoft Edge app?
Would you like to buy an Android phone? So I guess that maybe with your phone, it will be. One's phone. That's what they should call it. One's phone.
One's phone.
One's phone, one's documents, one's pictures.
It kind of remains to be seen how elegant this will be on iOS. I do think there are going to be some issues there.
That's not Microsoft's fault. That's Apple's fault. Apple doesn't let them in the door. Sure. They said, no.
Sure.
Yep.
I mean, the Apple you know, they do this for a reason, and it, they do it for anti-competitive reasons. But they also, but there is an argument to be made for the seamlessness of what they do.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, they say no, it just works better. They don't say it's anti-competitive. They just say it's, you know.
There's all kinds of ways you could market it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, right.
The anti-competitive angle isn't the one I would choose.
Multiple benefits.
It's it's legal adjacent. I'm just saying.
Multiple benefits. You know.
Yeah.
Skype's back, baby. Thank you, Brad Sams, for you're welcome, for letting us know that Skype. That Microsoft has capitulated and all's right with the world. Right?
I almost had a grand mal seizure when this thing happened, because right before I went on this trip, I got upgrade notices on all my computers about Skype 8 point whatever. And I thought, well, of course. Well, it's not the desktop app. It's this modern piece of junk that has like a single window. You know, it's like a mobile app. Yeah. And the first time I tried to do a podcast on it, it wouldn't even work. I had to revert to the old one, and then I had till September 1st.
Right. We've been telling people, get Skype Classic because...
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
What's anyone going to do?
Right.
But then, customer complaints to the rescue.
Yay.
So many people were mad about this. They went on the forums, and they were like, guys, you can't do this. Like, this version 8 doesn't have everything Skype Classic has. I'm switching. I'm leaving Skype.
Right.
Suddenly, this week, there was a post saying, guess what? We're going to extend the end of support of Skype 7 Classic to some so far unpublicized time in the future until we bring all the features you've asked us for to Skype 8. So no September 1st deadline. We don't know when the new deadline is for them getting rid of Skype Classic, but it's not going to be imminent.
I mean, the day they announced that, which wasn't that long ago, this must have been...
It was a week or two ago, right?
It's like, I think, I was still home, so it was like 3 weeks ago, let's say. It was after they started auto-installing this new update, those crazy, wily people. Anyway, I thought at that time, like, this is really aggressive. Like, they didn't, normally something like this, you look out over the year and you're like, look, it's January, so in September, we're going to start aggressively trying to upgrade people, and then... On January 1st, we're gonna force the upgrade. Yeah. They were like, oh, 30 days, this is gone. Or 6 weeks or whatever it was. And I was like, guys, like, hold on a second. This would be fine if the thing you're giving us worked. But the replacement is not better than the thing that you already have and does not work, in my case.
This is a long-standing tradition in software. Right? look at what Apple did with iMovie, what Adobe did with Lightroom. Whatever they call it.
Microsoft usually gives you more heads up, though. They do. They typically give you a longer runway.
Oh, and it's a completely reasonable complaint. I mean, don't take away features.
Right.
That's crazy.
No, and the only way we found out about this, by the way, was a reader, Rick R. Podrick, on Twitter, who sent me, Brad, and Paul a tweet and said, look at the support forum. They just acknowledged that they are postponing the date. They never announced that they were postponing the date. They just put it in the forum, kind of hid it. And because of this guy, we found it.
There's an important lesson here, and it's something that we all need to take to heart, and it is this. Complaining always works. And this is why I am the way I am.
Yeah.
So, I wish it always worked. It does sometimes work.
No, I know.
Yeah.
From a user experience standpoint, the issue I have with the new Skype clients, whether it's this new supposed desktop client or the Skype for Windows 10 client, which is really a mobile app, is that they're single window interfaces. The way I use Skype is in what they call it. I almost said complex mode, compact mode. So you have a window that has all of your contacts in it and all your recent conversations. But when I double click on Mary Jo's face or in Raphael's face or Brad's face or whatever, a new window opens up for each one of these people. And when I want to switch between what I'm doing, whether it's a conversation with Mary Jo or I'm in a Chrome web browser and Microsoft Word or whatever it is, I alt tab and all of those things are in there. Mm-hmm. And when you have a single window that has all of your communications in there and different little conversations in a list, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm an adult, right? I know that when I'm in my Google Chrome or Microsoft Edge and I have multiple tabs open, I mean, I can do like a control tab kind of thing and tab between them. I could adjust to this. That doesn't work in Skype. I don't. Maybe someone's listening and maybe they have the secret command code I can use to switch between these conversations. But, you know, I kind of want to get on with life. I don't want to pick up the mouse every time and be like, Mary Jo's little face, I'm going to click on her. And then, you know, like I just want to switch. You know, I type, I switch and I type and I can't do that. Or at least I don't know how to do it. It's not obvious. It doesn't work like other apps work. So anyway, hopefully they'll fix this. And
So you think what they're going to do is bring back Classic until they get all the features into the modern. Well,
it's still there. Classic is still there.
I mean, not. Yeah, I'm sorry. Keep it alive.
No, but yeah. This is important. You know, like I said, before I went away, I got it. You know, there's a new version of Skype, and I'm always like, of course I want to install that. You know, my God, this Skype application is terrible. Maybe you fixed it. And then I install it, and what installs when you go from 7.x to 8 is a completely different application. It has nothing to do with the application I was just using. It looks like the modern app. It's the single interface, you know, single window, whatever. And once I figured that out, Skype is one of the apps I actually saved to OneDrive, so I always have an install of it because I'm always afraid they're going to kill it. And I uninstalled it, and I reinstalled from OneDrive the original 7.x version, whatever it was, and I did that on both of the computers that I brought here so I could do these podcasts and it would actually work. The thing that kills me, this is so hard to explain like how horrible this is, but every day when I turned on one of these computers or logged into my account or whatever it was, every single time that window would come up and it would say, there's a new version of Skype available. Would you like to upgrade to it? And now I know that thing that they want me to upgrade to is broken. And no, I do not want to upgrade to that. And I saw this dialogue several times a day because when I'm here on this kind of a trip, I get up in the morning and I work. I see it then. I go out into the world. We visit Sweden or whatever we're doing. We come back, turn on the computer. I work. It comes again. Like it's just this constant in my face. And I'm happy to report that since this story has come out that they're going to back off, that thing does not appear anymore. Now, it may appear occasionally. Maybe I haven't seen it yet, but it used to come up multiple times every day. They were really aggressive about it. So this is a big change. Like, I'm really glad this happened.
Yeah. I was frankly surprised that it happened, but in a good way. Like, pleasantly surprised that people's complaints made a difference.
They should be as overt in explaining to the world that they screwed up and they're going to fix it as they were just announcing the original screw-up. I wish they had just kind of come out and said, look, we're sorry. It was too fast. We're going to set this right. We're good people. We're not trying to hurt you. they don't seem to be able to. It's weird. They can never really do that.
Yeah. Spotify's coming to Skype, though. That's nice.
Yeah, that's a bunch of nonsense words right there, but it's fine. It's just such a weird, you know. Of course,
so what does it even mean? I saw those headlines that I didn't click, but I'm like,
so
what,
Skype,
what
like any
mean?
Chat. Yeah, you have a chat window open. I'm talking to you, and there's a little there's an area where I can type in text, and that's what I do with you. I just type in text. But there's also a little plus button over on the side, and the plus button lets you add other stuff to the message, and those are the things I ignore. So one of the things you're going to be able to add is a link to a song, an artist, or an album that you like. And you're going to be able to share music through Skype. You're going to be able to play music through Skype. You and I could have a shared thing going on where we're chatting and listening to the same songs for some reason because we're teenagers now or whatever it is. I don't know. But it's
somebody must do this because this is – and you see a lot of these features like the now playing – you could, like, when you post a picture, have now play. There must be people who do this.
That used to be. You just remember. That's amazing. So back in the day, Windows XP timeframe, probably. I don't know. Windows Messenger or Windows Live Messenger.
Yeah.
You would see a person's name.
Status message.
Listening to.
Hall & Oates.
Absolutely. Through MTV Urge and Windows Media Player because I was that kind of an idiot in 2000 or whatever.
Listening to Sarah Smile by Hall & Oates. Next up, America, yep. A horse with no name. I'm
Anything
Casey
by
Kasem.
Kansas.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kansas.
Sure.
Yeah. We went to see Hall & Oates last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well. And they opened the concert with Casey Kasem. For 40 years, this duo has been... It's with the funniest... It's like, oh, boy. Okay. Trip back in time.
Yep.
Daryl Hall is 71 years old now.
Wow, he's really?
He's got a great voice, though.
He still sounds great. I was not... I was expecting, you know, Vegas lounge act. But they were like a jazz band.
He's the real...
They were jamming. John Oates is about 4 foot tall, but he still plays a rockin' guitar. And they have... The guy who must have been with him since the beginning, the sax guy, he looks like he's 90, but he's got flowing long gray hair down to his...
Like, it's what's his name? T-Bone Burnett. Didn't he play with those guys?
Yeah, like that.
Forever?
Yeah. It's the funniest thing I ever saw.
And now, because you asked for it, here's Hall & Oates.
Right. Let's take... Do you want to do... Is there any more Skype news?
No, okay. That's sadly all of it.
That's it.
Skype has ruined my life.
We're done with the Skype news? Okay, good. Yeah. So let's take a break. And the back of the book is next as we continue on with Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com. He's in Stockholm. Mary Jo Foley. And he's, by the way, this book is still available. If operators are standing by.
What a world that would be.
Wouldn't it be great if there were a long tail for books like the Delphi 3 Super Bible? But there isn't. That book is like fish. The day after it appears, it's out of date. What the hell?
That was outside my window.
Is the train coming through?
Oh. It sounded like...
Jeez, that was you? Wow. I thought maybe Paul, you know, because I figure Stockholm has a lot of trains. Yeah. It was just Paul's near the tracks, but no.
No. Yeah, no.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Do you have a rocket going by you could play?
I might have something like that on my sound effects.
Or not. I'm punchy today. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country. Honest to gosh, they're kind of amazing. Number one in customer satisfaction. For 8 years in a row, but number one now, and I think they're closely related, in volume as of December. They bypassed the big bank. And I'm glad because last time we bought a house 4 years ago, we bought it, we got a mortgage through the big bank. And that was no fun. You go into an office, you know, and you have to kind of be nice and dress up and look prosperous. And then they give you a big, long stack of application forms you got to fill out, and then you have to go find stuff and call the bank and say, you know, the other bank that I use, and say, can I get statements from 2010 through 2018? And I mean, it's just nuts. It took us several months. So I've told you before about how fast Quicken Loans is, especially their Rocket Mortgage product. This is an entirely online mortgage approval process. They call it Rocket Mortgage because it's fast. You go to rocketmortgage.com. You don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to get dressed up. You don't have to be obsequious or show prosperity. You merely need to go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, create an account there. They'll ask you a couple of questions you already know the answer to. And then because they have relationships with all the financial institutions, once you give them permission, they can get everything they need. And based on income and assets and credit, they'll give you qualified approval in minutes, literally minutes. The next step, they call this the power buying process, by the way. The next step is within 24 hours... They give you what they call verified approval. That's like leveling up. That's like another prestige level. Because with a verified approval, it's basically saying you got the loan. You are now, in effect, a cash buyer. This is a big deal. When you're going out now, we're in a seller's market. When you're going out to buy a house, the seller sees the verified approval, and you can get a letter or whatever it is they need. And they know you're good for it. So there's no contingency on getting the loan that puts you right at the head of the line when you're making an offer. There's still, though, some anxiety. I know buying a house is the most expensive thing you'll ever buy, right? Biggest check you'll ever write, right? So it's anxious-making. And the fact that interest rates have been going up lately is even more anxious-making. Because, you know, just a quarter-point interest increase means tens of thousands of dollars usually over the life of the loan. 30-year loan, there's a lot of interest. So every quarter point matters. And that has the unfortunate side effect of, as you're shopping for a house, putting pressure on you to buy right away. Like, don't wait another month because the interest rates are going up, right? And you don't want that. You don't want any pressure. You want to find the right house. You don't want to jump at the first thing you see. Honest. My realtor always told me, Leo, you love the house, but the house doesn't love you. Don't buy out of love. You got to really make it. You know, you got to. This is an important decision. So that's the other way that this power buying process helps you. Once you get the verified approval, you're qualified for Quicken Loans all new exclusive Rate Shield approval. This is the Rate Shield is great. It means your interest, even if interest rates are going up, and they are, yours won't. You lock in that interest rate for up to 90 days. That means you have up to 3 months to shop, to look for a house without any pressure. There's no time constraint. You could just say, we know what the rate's going to be. Actually, you don't, because it could go down. If rates go down, right now that's kind of unlikely, but if they go down, your rate will go down. It just won't go up. So you win either way. This is exactly what you'd expect from America's largest and best lender, because they're customer focused. They think about your experience and they're trying to make the mortgage approval process better for you. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Very simple. You only have to remember one thing, rocketmortgage.com/windows. Go there right now. Get it set up. Get ready. When it's time, you'll be ready. They do refis too, by the way. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. They're an equal housing lender. They're licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/windows. That's all you need to know. RocketMortgage.com/windows. We thank them so much for making our Windows Weekly podcast possible. We continue on with the back of the book, and Paul has a tip of the week. Paul?
Yes.
Yes. Indeed, yes, I do. You know, if you only had a Surface Go, it would just pop right up.
That's true. I have it in some goofy little window because I don't want the white to blow up my face.
You're kind of pink and purple right now a little bit.
Yeah. So last week it was...
Dusk.
I was ghost face. No, it's what is it? 10. So yeah. It looks dark outside from here.
Yeah.
But if you were to go outside, you could see the sky. Like, it's not.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. Weirder is the 3:30 in the morning sunrise thing. But anyway, so Microsoft is widely expected to upgrade most of its Surface PCs this fall, probably in October. So it is perhaps not coincidental that right now their portable computers are all on sale. At least the ones from the previous gen. So you may recall that Surface Laptop and Surface Pro in particular are on previous gen Intel chips. So they're dual core, not quad core like we get in the 8th gen. Surface Book 2, however, is on the 8th gen, at least on the upper level models. But it too is on sale. And so all of those computers are on sale right now through the Microsoft Store from between $200 to $300 off depending on the model. Looking across these, I would say the sweet spot is probably the Surface Laptop. So the base configuration of that device is an M3 processor, which is not great, $799. But for $799 on sale now, you can get the Core i5 with 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gig SSD. And this is an awesome laptop. It's an incredible price. I believe the base Surface Pro is the same price, Core i5, 128, 8 gigs of RAM, but you need to buy this, you know, the type cover and possibly a pen, so it's a little bit more. But if you've been kind of holding off because of the prices and everything, this is probably about as good as it's going to get for the previous gen, unless the newest stuff comes out. Maybe they fire sale the old stuff, but this is a good sale. So you had to go to the MicrosoftStore.com and just check that out. Mary Jo, did you want to do your code name now? Because it's kind of related.
I could. Yeah. Can we do the code name now? Just mix it up a little bit?
I don't know. Sure. Oh, my God. Now I've got to rearrange everything. All right. I've got my pencil out. I'll just. Yep. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yep. So, yes.
as Paul just said, we believe some surfaces are coming this fall. And the rumor mill has said what we're likely to see this fall are the slight refreshes of the Surface Laptop and the Surface Pro 5, which is known as just plain old Surface Pro. We think they'll both get a refreshed 8th generation Intel chip and maybe USB-C, and that's about it. So that's why we think these things are on sale. I haven't heard anything about the next Surface Book, Surface Book 2. But we do know some of the code names of these things floating around. We don't know these refreshed Surface Pro or the Surface Laptop. We don't have code names for those so far. But we know that there is a Surface Pro 6, but probably not until next year. And we've heard from Brad that code name is Carmel, like Carmel, California.
I like the name.
Carmel, sorry.
Or Carmel, that's different than Carmel. Okay.
Yes, sorry. Carmel.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, because Surface Studio 2, which we also think is, well, we're not actually sure if it's this year or next year, Capitola. So it seems like they're using city code names for the next generation. We think, well, you know what, Surface Studio 2, I'm curious. I think that will be a 2019 thing also. I think both Surface Pro 6 and Surface Studio 2 will be next year. The refreshes on Surface Laptop and Surface Pro will be this fall, I think. So we have we have the code names for the things that are next year, but we don't have the code names for the things that are this fall.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll see. So, I mean, I think this explains the sale. You know, it's coming. They're getting rid of inventory or whatever, but these are great machines. They're all great machines. Surface Pro, the current version of Surface Pro, current version of Surface Lab, they're excellent.
Yeah, Alex, remember he was debating the $800 deal and the Surface Go. Yep. Ended up getting the Surface Pro. He's very happy.
He would definitely prefer that computer.
Good.
Bonus unrelated tip. Yep. So Microsoft finally joined Movies Anywhere, the Disney service, where you're combined purchases from across different services from across multiple movie studios will be available everywhere, right? So this is kind of nice on a number of levels, but I have purchased a bunch of content from Apple, for example, and about two-thirds of that now is available through Google Movies and TV, Google YouTube, Amazon Prime Video, and now through Microsoft Movies and TV. And that's great. And so if you wouldn't do this on a Surface Go, but on another Surface device, if you're going to take it on a flight, what that means is if you purchased a bunch of content elsewhere, it will show up in the Microsoft app on the Surface device or whatever PC you might have. The hit rate for me is about two-thirds, but I guess it could be about as low as 50%. The issues are that some top studios are not there. I know Paramount is one of them. I don't have the list off the top of my head, but some studios out there. I think five of the biggest movie studios are involved with this. Obviously, the Disney stuff is all there. That includes the Star Wars movies and all the Disney movies. Each of the studios actually does take some movies out of the system, which is kind of interesting. I just found out about that this week.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's a fact about this. So some of it's out. But when I look at the – I probably have 300-something purchases from iTunes.
I love Disney or movies.
Yeah, so when I open up Microsoft Movies and TV, I have 206 movies in there now, and I probably had 12 before or something. So that's really nice. Anyway, if you sign up for this now, Microsoft will give you a free movie. The bad news is it's one of the lesser X-Men movies, but it's still a free movie, so –
That is dopey as you can get.
It's like X-Men Future Today. So I don't forget the name of it. It's a stupid thing, but whatever. It's a free movie.
Hey, it's free.
Free is still free.
Still takes 2 hours of your time you'll never get back, but it is free.
Well, one of the things that is a reality on Windows 10 is that the UWP apps that are built into the system often get much better battery life than the classic desktop app. So, for example, if I wanted to play movies that I bought from iTunes before, I could use iTunes, which is a battery hog. It's terrible. Or if I had signed up for Movies Anywhere, maybe I could get the Amazon Prime Video app, which is a desktop app, which is also a terrible app. Now I can get a bunch of them in Movies and TV, which is a Microsoft UWP app. It's going to get great battery life. It's the optimal situation. When Microsoft does battery life tests on Surface, that's the app they use because it gets incredible battery life. you know, there's an advantage to this. So there's no reason not to do it. One of the cool things about this is if you sign up, you link your Microsoft account with Movies Anywhere right now, and those movies kind of come over to your Movies and TV app, and then you're like, well, I don't want to do this anymore for some reason, and you unlink them, those movies stay there. They're in your collection. Right. They actually don't go away.
You don't lose them, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. Like, there's no reason not to do this.
And you get the great X-Men Days of Future
Past. And you get the X-Men, whatever the Future Past garbage, whatever, it's stupid. So
I just did it. You can do it on the Movies Anywhere site. And I presume this is going to work with my Xbox, too, right? Movies.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So that's great.
And you can link this from anywhere. I actually did it on an iPad, and I still got the movie, so it doesn't matter how you do it.
No, exactly. Paramount, Lionsgate, there are a few studios that don't participate.
Yeah, but the five of the biggest ones are there, and it's pretty sizable.
I got my Star Wars collection all moved over, so that's good.
That's right.
Yep.
That's happy. Key for me.
Got my Alien, the director's cut. I don't think the Star Trek stuff moved over, so maybe that's...
No, because it's Paramount.
Paramount, right.
Paramount is Star Trek. Friday the 13th is Paramount. That's probably about it.
I could still watch them on my iTunes. It's just it's nice if I had it everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you like to see universal compatibility. Right. But this kind of thing is really cool because remember when music went non-proprietary and they opened it up and it was just available everywhere all of a sudden? It was amazing. And I remember thinking when that happened, this will never happen with movies.
Yeah.
And this kind of gets there. It's pretty close. Like
they're smart because this helps against piracy because people it's convenience is what people want. They're not trying to save a buck as much, I don't think, as convenience.
It's not. It's really nice. It kind of helps fight the lock-in that you get.
Right.
You know, one of the issues with people used to say, should I buy movies from Microsoft? Like, why would you ever do that? You can't play them anywhere.
Right.
Now the movies you bought from Microsoft, many of them will play in other places. Now, there's no Movies and TV app on Android or iOS, but there is a Movies Anywhere app. But you can also get you just link it to your Google account. You can get it through the Google Player. You can get it through the Apple Player on an iPhone. It's nice to use the native app to watch the content you already purchased, no matter where you purchased it. Yeah. It's a win. There's no downside to this. Definitely do this. Everybody, right now, good stop tip. Listening to this podcast.
No,
this
I did
now.
It while listening, and I think you can too.
Yeah,
it's not like as hard as walking and chewing gum.
So the app pick of the week is kind of interesting. I feel like we discussed this topic generally a few weeks ago, which is this: if you buy a Lenovo PC or an HP PC or a Dell or a Samsung or whatever it is, it comes with whatever it comes with. But one of the things it comes with is this app. That's there for support, system maintenance and health checking, download drivers and firmware for the PC. These things, every PC maker does this, except for Microsoft. So with Microsoft, the way things work is all of your drivers and firmware updates come through Windows Update, which is cool. But what if something's wrong with the computer? Or what if you just want to check on the health of the computer? What's the battery? How's the battery doing? That's one of those things you can check over time if it's displays, the battery effectiveness goes down over time. Well, it turns out Microsoft does make an application for this. They just don't put it on the computer for some stupid reason. And this thing is called Surface Diagnostic Toolkit. You can download it for free, obviously. There are various ways to get it. You can just download it direct from Microsoft. You can download it from the Surface app that is built into Surface devices. But I think the coolest thing about this is, well, there's two cool things about it. One is, for those people who have decided to stick to Windows 10S or Windows 10 and S mode, they actually make a version of this in the store, right? Because it's a desktop app. So previously, with like a Surface laptop or whatever Surface Go with Windows 10S, you could not use this app. Now you can. That's neat. But the other second thing that's cool about this is it's hardware specific. So depending on the capabilities of your device, so Leo's installing it now if you're not watching this. So you're going to have to reboot after it does its little update thing. But when it reboots, what it does is it steps through all of the stuff that is unique to your hardware. It's really convoluted on Surface Book because Surface Book, not only can you detach the screen, but you can rotate the screen, right? You can put it on backwards, flip the thing down. It goes into different usage modes. It literally tests every one of those modes with and without power connected So you have to really be paying attention during the wizard. But it will actually step through this amazing set of diagnostic tests. And then it will save it. And you can run these things over time. And it will save the history of the test that you ran. And so if you ever have a problem with your computer and you have to have it serviced by Microsoft or you're doing one of those remote support sessions, they can use that data to find out what happened to your computer.
Nice.
So this is something, if you're a Surface owner, you need to get this right now. You need to install it. You need to run through the wizard like you're doing right now. You need to step through the diagnostic thing for at least once just to do it. There's probably nothing wrong with your computer, but just to kind of get it in there. And then you have to pray to God that nothing ever happens to your computer because you're screwed because it's Microsoft. But this is, it's actually really useful. I don't understand why this is not on the computer.
Yeah.
Like this is something that should just be included with Windows, with any Surface PC.
All right. So now I have to restart just to.
Yeah. And when it reboots, what it's going to do is run through a wizard. You're going to have to play with it. There's literally an interactive thing you have to do, which in your case will involve unplugging the keyboard cover, the type cover, unplugging the power connector, using it in both modes with and without it.
It's really quite a diagnostic. Wow.
Mm. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
Good deal.
Yep.
Paul has a link to the Surface Diagnostic Toolkit on his website, therot.com. And now to Mary Jo Foley for the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
Yes, so end of September this year is Microsoft Ignite, which is their big IT pro conference. And late last week, they published the session list for Ignite, at least some of the sessions, 628 of them, to be precise.
Yikes.
Are now listed. So I went through them to look to see if there's any hints about what we might learn at Ignite, and there were some interesting things I picked out. One is there is a lot of Dynamics 365 content at the show, which is very unusual for Ignite. So a lot of ERP, CRM. There is a ton of developer content. This isn't typically a developer show, but there is a lot of developer content. Some PWA sessions will be there. Lots of things about developer tools. There's a couple of sessions about Surface. One of them calls out LTE specifically, and another calls out the hub, the next version of the hub. So I would expect we might see the hub go into public testing, hub 2 go into public testing around the time of Ignite. And Surface LTE, I'm thinking that's a reference to the Go. Because they've said a Surface Go LTE version, based on Intel still, by the way, will be out this fall. And there's also a couple hints about SQL Server in there, which I think are probably in reference to the next version of SQL Server, which we've been hearing little tidbits about. I think that's in private testing right now. So, hello?
Sorry,
so
Paul likes to flip his microphone up when he's having a sip of beer.
I thought it sounded like you scratched a record. Like, like what is he doing? Yeah. So,
I'll mute his mic, Mary Jo.
Yes. I've only been podcasting for 2,000 years. I'm sorry.
Hey, I sneezed on the podcast today, so I'm like, whoops. So, yeah, if you go to the Microsoft Ignite website, just search for Microsoft Ignite and go to session catalog. You don't have to be registered to go see all these sessions, but you can go and search through them. You can search by name, like if you want to see only the Windows sessions, of which there are over 100, by the way, 100 things happening there that mention Windows. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good show. We're going to be there live doing Windows Weekly there.
Oh, cool. What day is that?
It's the last week of September.
Oh, that's right. I think I'll be here for that, actually.
Will you be there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if you were back or not.
I get back the 21st, so yeah, I'll be there.
It's September 24th.
25th or 4th, okay. 26th. Yeah, good. Yep. I'll be there for that.
Yeah, so that's the Enterprise pick, and we already did the codename pick.
Oh, that's right. I see a blue arrow pointing
blue arrow.
upward. Well, in that case,
it looks like a child's scribblings on a like something you'd put on a refrigerator.
I did it with my pen. In that case, it's time for
Let me see here. Oh, yeah, there's the blue arrow. And now it's time for beer.
Yes, finally. Yes,
finally.
It's been hot, not only in Europe, but in New York. It has been meltingly hot. Tons of humidity, heat. There's not a lot of heavy beers you want to drink in that weather. But you know what a good beer is for that weather? A gozer, which is salted, lightly sour beers that a variety of beer makers are making these days. Mm. I have one this week, Westbrook Cucumber Lemon Gozer.
Oh, wow.
Delicious.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Tastes like a cucumber, like lightly pickled cucumber with a touch of lemon and a little coriander and a little salt. It's so refreshing. It's almost like a lemonade. It's only 4%. You could drink a lot of them. And it's from Westbrook, which is an excellent top-tier craft beer maker in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. So if you see they're out in cans and they're around right now. So it should be possible to find them in multiple places. Westbrook Cucumber Lemon Gozer. Highly recommended.
Highly recommended. That sounds... I want some right now. Right now. Mary Jo Foley, she's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog, and you can read it as she posts virtually every single day. Are you writing your posts on your Surface Go, or are you mostly doing it still on your Acer? Or your HP,
I
guess.
HP still, yeah. Mostly, or my desktop. I haven't really tried to write anything super long on the Go yet.
Yeah, that would be an interesting...
Probably for the best.
Yes.
I know, I think it's for the best, too. Yeah.
You can also find Paul Thurrott at Thurrott.com when he's not in Sweden. No, that's the beauty of Thurrott.com. It's everywhere Paul wants to be. Thurrott.
Like an American Express.
Like Visa. Yeah. Thurrott.
There are lots of R's and T's in there and a couple of L's.
It's hard. If I slow down, I can't do it. If I say Thurrott, I can do it. But if I start to do a letter at a time, it just falls apart. You know where to go. And
I would have taken my wife's maiden name as my own if I could have when we got married.
Don't say it out loud because I know it's the password for your children's college fund.
No,
it's not. You will find him also at leanpub.com. That's where his books live, and you'll find both of them right here every Wednesday, right about 11 a.m. Pacific, if Leo doesn't get sidetracked. That'll be 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch it live. You can watch it live.twit.tv. That's the old page, still alive. Or our website, which is twit.tv/live. Subscribe, and you'll get a copy each and every Wednesday the minute it's available. We're in every podcatcher. Just look for Windows Weekly. And, of course, you can download back episodes at twit.tv/ww. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. And we'll see you next time. I guess, Paul, you'll be back home.
Oh, my God. I didn't tell you this. There is a store in Stockholm called Emmaus.
Oh, my God. Oh, do they sell stuff from Pennsylvania?
No, but how amazing would it be if they had a sister store in Emmaus called Stockholm?
There is. And I have pictures of it. An American store in Stockholm. Where you can buy Kellogg's cornflakes, Heinz ketchup, Campbell's tomato soup. It's empty.
Heinz ketchup.
No one's
there. Go to the British store and buy HP sauce.
HP sauce, exactly.
Curiously unrelated to the computer company.
Did you see that former HPE CEO Meg Whitman is now going to be running a big Hollywood streaming studio?
I thought
studio.
You were going to say she was now burning in hell.
Well,
that's interesting.
So Leo Apotheker, her predecessor, always gets the heat for things like the that big acquisition of the company.
So the guy after him, Mark.
Mark Lane. Mark Hurd, rather.
Mark Hurd. He didn't end up so well either.
No. Yeah. The pretexting case. Mm-hmm. But was Meg that bad a CEO? She at least had the good sense to split HP into two parts. Okay. Well, it's an odd person to tap for this because Jeffrey Katzenberg has created a new over-the-top streaming network, kind of another Netflix, I think, but they've got more than a billion in funding. Katzenberg put 700-some million
Meg Whitman, she was eBay, right?
It's Meg Whitman. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was eBay. Yeah,
eBay, yeah. And then she was eBay, and then HP, yeah. And she will be the CEO, even though she has no experience in Hollywood or media.
She was no Carly Fiorina. That's all I'm saying.
But who was? All right,
we're gonna sell this iPod, and it's gonna be HP Blue.
Oh God, that was a terrible idea.
Yep.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly.